This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Excellent. Our weather today, highs of 14 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade. It's going to be breezy, cloudy with some bright spells. OK then, so what's the weather like in Gibraltar, Gabriella?
I think it might rain today.
You think it might
rain
today? It's looking
a bit grey, overcast, I think it's 20 degrees.
Yeah, well, that's life on the rock, of course. Now, last week we were speaking about the tremendous excitement that was the Gibraltarians' fourth literary festival.
Yeah.
We did a feature with Nicholas Parsons. Oh, he seemed to be on form, didn't he, Ben? Really?
Yeah, very good.
So, yeah, 93, as you said.
Indeed.
93 yeah. English years and still...
Never believed it.
Exactly. Older than Prince Philip. Anyway, what did you make of it, Gabriella? What things did you attend? Is it a case of you relax now, Gibraltar goes quiet for another 12 months?
No, we're never quiet, but, I went to 3 talks this year. I went to Horatio Clare's talk about his, book, I think it's called, Down with the Ships. It's about, cargo ship life. So it's really interesting, how these sailors kind of stay on deck for months and months on end, and they're bringing milk from Argentina to Canada because it's cheaper to cargo milk from that distance than actually produce milk in Canada, which is quite ridiculous. But and I went to another one with Kathy Wallace, who was a teachers union national president. And which one was the third one I went to? Oh, I went to a local one, which was Carmen Gomez. She was an aspiring actress who told about her times in the 1970s in London. I quite thoroughly enjoyed it. And Nicholas Parsons gave a good speech at the closing dinner, because I went to that as well. And, he was hoping to... Because I think he's been in the Literary Festival for at least 2 years or 3 years. And looking forward to coming again, he said.
Well, I'm not surprised. In fact, there is a video that goes back to the late 1950s, directed and produced by Gerry Anderson, of course, much known for his work with Thunderbirds, celebrating 50 years last year, of course, and 51 years this year, which actually does feature a topless Nicholas Parsons. I just want to put that out there. So it's, I know, it shocked me, I can tell you. But obviously he was swimming at the time, but it was quite a shock, really. It's one of those sort of reporting jobs he was actually doing, Alison. Anyway, moving on. As we said, we have Alison Moore in the studio. Never met Gabriella Peralta, one of our ACE journalism graduates from a few years ago now, but paths didn't cross. She is, together with her faithful friend Frodo, our key soul within Gibraltar, really. Not a hobbit, it's a pug. Okay, so it's important. Anyway, Gabriella, any questions you'd like to put to Alison Moore, who has returned to the auspices that is the Siren Studio at the University of Lincoln, primarily to talk about Oxfam, but all sorts of other exciting things as well. Gabriella, take it away.
Yeah, I'd like to hear a bit more about her work with Oxfam.
Well, what can I say? Oxfam's one of the leading charities in the world. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't say good morning, Gabriella.
Good morning.
We do a huge amount of work in the world, in many of the continents, and Oxfam's work falls into 3 parts. We campaign for change, campaigning directly to government, and... We do an awful lot of relief work, sort of on-the-spot relief for disasters. And the third round of work that Oxfam does is empowering people. So it's not about just giving money or giving relief when something happens, but it's actually about getting people off their beam ends and helping themselves and helping them to sort of start businesses, helping them to be empowered in their communities. Particularly, we work hard to empower women. There's 3 strands, and all of those strands are equally important to help people to be able to help themselves, really, because people obviously don't want to just be given things. They want to be able to lead lives that they feel proud of. So that's why I work for Oxfam.
Outrageously wonderful. As we knew it would be. Now, Ben, you're clearly one of the key folk of Signet PR, the university. So you're already doing some fabulous things, etc. Is this the sort of thing where you might be able to help?
I think so. But, I mean, charitable in itself is an industry that's thriving in PR. And I think in general, it's because it's such a big charity, there's a lot of work needs, obviously, doing in the background, which a lot of people don't really get the chance to see. But yeah, what's your kind of role within Oxfam?
Well, at the moment, I'm lucky enough to be deputy manager of the new shop in Lincoln. We opened a few weeks ago. And so I just, you know, I'm it's a start-up shop, and at the moment we're running quite madly, establishing the shop. Sales have been fantastic the first few weeks. But what I really want to do is to reach out to the community and get more volunteers on board. Particularly, I think it's important to be reaching out to the university, because so many of the things that you can do at Oxfam build on your CV, basically. All of those key skills for the workplace are things that we can offer, team working, you know, working independently, all the retail skills, but also, particularly, you're in the business of PR, we need people to blog, to Twitter, we need people to develop advertising campaigns for us. I don't mean a world-based advertising campaign.
Of course, locally.
But, yeah, local awareness. So we want to big ourselves up in the local community, because we've got so much that we can offer people.
There we are.
Yes, I'll have a chat with them when we go there.
Exactly, precisely. This is very, very, very much just like putting people together. Just in case you're wondering, no, Gabriella, we hadn't forgotten about your official rider.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Is he asleep, by the way?
He is asleep. He hasn't even had his breakfast this morning.
You sure he hasn't gone into suspended animation? I mean, he's been asleep now for the last 3 or 4 weeks, actually.
I know, he's been... I don't know what it is. Winter's hit, and he just decided he doesn't want to leave the house to go for his morning walk, which I force him. And now he hasn't even wanted to eat his breakfast. I brought out his breakfast, he looked at it, turned his head away, and walked straight back to his bed.
Time was, he used to get so excited, you couldn't stop him sort of yapping away over one of these sort of phone links, and now he's just completely unconscious most of the time. He's not got an alcohol problem, has he? No, it's all right, it's just a pug after all. Moving on, Alison, I don't know if you can remember the last two questions, because it's been quite some time, but I'm sure, you know, faith is there. Let's see if you can work through the whole process. Go, let's go for those last two questions for Gabriella, please.
Well, Gabriella, I can't believe, well, this is not a question so much as a statement, really. It's winter in Gibraltar and it's 70 degrees. How do you cope?
You know, I find it very cold.
Oh, wow.
So I put on a jacket and everything, and it's like 20
Good
degrees
grief.
And I've got a jacket.
Oh, yes.
I don't know how I lived in the UK for 3 years. To be honest, I used to wear tights, leggings and jeans. And then a vest, a jumper and a coat. So,
Oftentimes, she actually come into seminars, it was rather like a kind
I used
of,
to look like a bit of like a sausage person.
Well, I'm amazed, but I do have to ask you those last two questions. Have you enjoyed being on the show today?
Yes, thank you.
And will you be back very soon?
Yeah, definitely.
That's all we need to know, really.
One. sheets down and I lie on the bench. I can always hear them talk. Me? I'm just a lawnmower. You can tell me by the way I walk.
I like. One for the Doug Brands amongst us there. I know. Your new passers-by, he is actually contactable, but he's a keen Genesis solo.
Very, very keen. Doug Brand, well, yeah. So is my dad, but...
Oh, well, and again, good morning, Mr. Lewis. And if you're not listening to this on the morning, well, good happy time of day, whatever it is.
Indeed.
Richard Fitzwilliams, I suspect that somehow along the way, Tom Cruise is not going to rank highly in terms of the views on Jack Reacher Never Go Back, but I could be wrong.
Well, in fact, it's... I hate to say it. Cruise is marvellous given the right role, and this is not it. I mean, I would call it a meaningless load of twaddle. He should do better than this. If he was so good in Minority Report, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, absolutely exciting, really had me on the edge of my seat. Does he need pot boilers? I mean, he's got plenty of success, so plenty of money. Does he need also to, I think he could have lent on Edwards Vic, because Vic is a director who likes the large screen and a canvas, which can work like Blood Diamond, or it can fail like Last Samurai, where, of course, Cruise was in that as well. Here we have military investigator Jack Reacher, who, played by Cruise, returns to headquarters to meet Major Susan Turner, played by Kobe Smulders, only to hear from Colonel Sam Morgan that she's been accused and detained, and her attorney says she's been involved with the murders of two soldiers in Afghanistan. But what happens when both colonels, his attorney is also a colonel, are murdered? And this, frankly, it's a ridiculous film. The plot is silly, and not only that, constant, endless fistfights, which have no resemblance to reality at all. I'm getting tired of seeing people hit each other and hardly have a scratch, and this movie is just simply full of it. It's got a plot which is totally aimless. It wastes Tom Cruise, which is a crime. In fact, it's got almost nothing because it's got no excitement.
Well, I think you've nailed your colours to the mast there. Ben, you were saying that you quite liked the first one.
Yeah, I mean, from the first one. I don't know if you liked it, Richard, did you?
I didn't see it, and it's called No Jack Reacher Never Go Back, and I'm never going back to another.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we get where you're coming from.
I'll tell you
really,
for it.
Really, there's nothing to attract me to it, because, I mean, you've just got a series of situations obviously contrived, and, I mean, if it doesn't have excitement, if there's no drama, and if it wastes top stars, well...
I can't believe you criticised Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai, though. But, Alison, from what you've actually just seen, would you appeal to... Would Jack Reacher Never Go Back appeal to your good self?
No, I'm with the Never Go Back side of things. I think Tom Cruise is...
Scientologist.
Richard said, he's fabulous in a good role, but you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and this isn't.
Okay then, moving on then to Queen of Katwe.
Queen of Katwe is super because for once we've got a happy story with black actors to come out of Africa, which doesn't feature a bloodbath in one way or another. I'm thinking of Hotel Rwanda, Blood Diamond, which I just mentioned, Last King of Scotland, and so on. I mean, this actually is a Disney feel-good story, which tells a tale of Fiona Mutesa, who grew up in the slums of Kampala, that's Katwe is one of them, and became a chess champion and a world candidate master. We've got top actors, which will attract, I hope, a good crowd for this. David Oyelowo as the coach, Robert Katende. He's always good. And excellent performance by Lupita Nyong'o. Remember his poor Patsy in 12 Years a Slave as Fiona's mother, Naku Harriet. She is excellent because the struggles, after all, just keeping body and soul together, surviving in a slum, whilst you've got Madinga Nalwanga playing Fiona, and also showing that there is real talent here. It's also got director Mira Nair, who's very high profile, and what she does is bring out the glorious vivacity, the colourful aspect of Africa and of Uganda most specifically. And it's a movie which works. It's a feel-good story. It's lively. There's a good deal of fun in it. And I must say that I do hope that for once a story which, as I say, isn't dominated by white actors. This is one of these movies where if you're looking to have a story featuring diversity, you've got it. One problem is chess is not the easiest of games to film and make it exciting. But having said that, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thomas Crown Affair from Russia with Love. Lots of cases of chess being featured in the movies.
Yes, very occasionally. He certainly mentioned two, but Thomas Crown Affair, they were rather large, I think.
Well, that's true. Anyway, make your move. That's the important thing. Ben, will you be making your move to see Queen of Katwe?
Based on Richard's opinion, I believe I should.
Alison?
I think definitely I would. It's all about empowerment. It's all about positive images of Africa. It's well down Oxfam Street.
I did feel there was a connection there. So seamless the way we worked together this. And Richard, briefly, you've got a little exhibition you want to share with us as well.
Well, the exhibition of South Africa, Art of a Nation. I mean, there's a tremendous amount to see because the history of South Africa goes back 3 million years. That's where they discovered the first human skeletons called Australopithecine Africanus. Now, this is a very, very mixed bag. The idea is, firstly, you tell the story of a country which has been so violent and so cruel. As we know, there's been the evils of apartheid. That's told chronologically. But also, that we see contemporary artists, black and white, in South Africa and how they've been influenced by South Africa's history. And there's a great deal in this, including an absolutely magnificent Xhosa cloak worn rather like some sort of giant, very, very impressive robe. There's some early figurative sculptures, which I have to say I was fascinated by. I'd never heard of them, and I was brought up there. But then the past of the indigenous Africans was largely ignored by the then apartheid regime. And also there is a great deal in the exhibition that could have been better because a lot of the labeling is, and you can see why, extremely polemic. There are no, for example, there are quite a few white artists, Irma Schoen, Maurice van Esch, ones I remember, before the end of apartheid. We only see one mentioned briefly. But in all of what it offers, it's well worth going and then debating what you see, because that's part of the purposes of a show, which is put on by the British Museum. And you could make another show, which is indeed somewhat more inclusive, because the colonial era in Africa was 400 years, and there's practically nothing which relates to that, but there are a load of fascinating artifacts. And also, I have got to mention this very, very clever white artist in 2011. It was a black soap in South Africa on television, and she placed herself as an extra in it to show the marginalization these days of the whites, and they pay no attention to her. They simply behave as though she's not there. And the critics have been most entertained by this because it's a most ingenious statement. So there's a lot in this movie, in this exhibition going back so many hundred years, where the history of a country, there's been so much war, so much repression. Repression doesn't breed great art, and there's certainly nothing that I would say was great, but there's a great deal to debate and to discuss. It could have been done much better, but my goodness, what a history. And some of those rock paintings that we see with the Bushmen and the San people in the early years, I mean, they're quite extraordinary too.
Sounds like a possible location report. Alison, British Museum, South Africa exhibition?
Oh, it's just got to be a go-to exhibition, that one, for me. I know the British Museum anyway does these exhibitions fantastically well. And again, there's so much that we need to know about this huge continent. And, you know, finding out about the different backgrounds and the different cultures.
It's got more than Nelson Mandela and Pik Botha.
Yes, it certainly has. And it's about time those things were brought out and brought into the public domain.
There's a necklace, by the way, worn by Nelson Mandela, and I've got to also mention another priceless exhibit, sandals, which Mahatma Gandhi, who began his freedom fighting in South Africa because of the repression of the Asians there, he sent General Smuts, who was then ruling South Africa, a pair of sandals, which are exhibited. Smuts apparently wrote to Gandhi saying years later that he'd worn the sandals very frequently and liked to think that he was stepping into the footsteps of a really great man when he did. There were all sorts of things in this exhibition that you could debate, argue about. Certainly, as I say, a lot of the art I remember, there's absolutely nothing that represents it, but there's a great deal of new art in South Africa, both that which works and that which does not, and which, if you look back at a history of a country going back, and it goes back 3 million years, because the first human skeletons were found there, you've got so much, far more than I could mention here, but
well,
it really
Richard,
is
we'll, worth we'll hold it there, except it needs to be said, presumably when you're wearing Gandhi sandals, you don't wear white socks. It's a fashion faux pas. Ben, last two questions for Monsieur Fitzwilliams, please.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, I certainly have. It's nice to have Africa as a theme occasionally.
Indeed. And will you be back, sorry?
I look forward to it. Without Tom Cruise in a role like that, give him a good role. His first
never go back, Richard. Never go back.
Through the forest, The Cure, and The Cure for Pep Guardiola. Well, it'll work out okay in the end. I don't want to hear a thing from you, Ian Lennox, at all. Suffice it to say that, you know, Hull City are not Manchester United.
Falls for evil laughter.
Okay, let's move on. Dirty Rotten Scoundrel, and that's clearly what all VC can be replied to certain supporters, including, of course, those of Slaven Bilic, West Ham United. Let's move on to where Tessa Snart and Hannah Brown, currently lying down waiting for a car parking space in Lincoln for our parents. It's the sort of thing that students do these days, Alison. Back in the day, used to go out and protest march for the LSE, etc. Now it's protest for the rights for a car parking space for your parent.
Well, the world moves on.
I think so. Anyway, hopefully you're finding that, Hannah, because I know she was planning it strategically, I think, last
she
night.
Was,
Tessa.
She was. She really was.
Coordinating the whole thing. I mean, do you have this challenge in Newcastle, Ian? I mean, from last time I recall, that car parking in Newcastle is not quite as challenging as perhaps it is in Lincoln.
I don't know, really. I haven't driven for about 5 years now, so I just get the pensioners bus in and that sort of stuff.
If you've got the pensioners bus going in, that's all you actually
the corporation
want.
Chauffeur.
Always important. Anyway, the County Amateur Operatic and Dramatic Society's presentation of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I'm holding the brochure in my hand now. The Chihuahua was sensational.
Oh, he was the star of the show.
Yes, Alison. A Chihuahua on stage at the new Lincoln Theatre Royal, waving its little legs around like some kind of whirling dervish.
Who would have thought that could happen in Lincoln?
It's just pushing those boundaries.
Chihuahua on stage.
Exactly. Yeah. Chihuahuas on stage. in a sense, it's just as well Ben couldn't actually make, because I think the shock of the chihuahua would have possibly...
It would have knocked me out.
Yeah, Brighton boy, you know, who knows what could have happened. That's like suddenly sees a chihuahua. You may be wondering, in terms of the details of the chihuahua, well, Ian, I know you're always keen on this, so we'll actually look at the cast list here, and it's Binky Ward. Binky, the chihuahua, first joined Chaods this year. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was his first show with the Society. He says the show really spoke to him, but it's been rough going as it's his first show. Binky was desperate for a lead role, and though he was barking mad when the opportunity came up to paw his way to the top, he just had to be part of the show and has enjoyed the treats, belly rubs and naps whilst being danced around. Sounds like the way you used to run a communications degree in many ways, really.
It
treats,
does,
belly
yeah.
rubs, naps.
Do you think he gets his own dressing room?
It takes me back.
He has his own picture.
Yeah, exactly. I
mean, his own makeup artist.
There's Binky in full force there. Anyway, enough of such. I think. Yes, Ian, go on.
There's a story. When, many years ago, when I was a young reporter, one of the senior reporters went to the Sunderland Empire, I think it was, to do a review of a show which had a donkey on stage. And the cameraman had gone for the sort of preview pick, and he pictured this donkey with some of the cast. And Alan, my friend, when he did his review, didn't mention the donkey. So about 3 o'clock in the morning, he was sleeping, rather tentative sub-editor rang him up and said, dear Alan, he said, we've got this picture of this donkey in the show, and you have mentioned it. Could you possibly rewrite it a little bit? And he said, yes, he said. A donkey also took part and split the phone down.
Exactly. Always a classic in every way, shape, or form. Alison, you're a keen animal soul. I mean, chihuahuas on the stage, donkeys on performing times in the Sunderland Empire. I mean, are we thinking, surely it's just a short step to the evil of Billy Smart Circus?
I think it just depends, really. I think dogs are natural performers anyway, and they, you know, as long as they get their belly rubs, like it says, that.
I mean, I was
no
very tempted to
done.
Walk out when the dog was apparently shot halfway through the first act.
Surely they're not getting through one dog a night.
Well,
we did discuss this, didn't we? Who stands in for Binky? There must be a.
It has to be a series of stand-ins.
It's not going to be a Great Dane, is it?
Possible stunt dogs that could actually sort of turn up for the whole thing. But overall, your thoughts on the second major production since the Lincoln New Theatre Royal officially launched, Tessa?
Oh, I thought it was brilliant. It really was like the glitz and glam, the proper theatre show.
Running all the way to November the 5th, so lots of time for you to actually go and see.
Definitely
this,
go and see it.
And of course, it's in aid of the Lincolnshire Air Ambulance, I believe, as far as I know. It's on the programme. I haven't got it immediately in front of me because I've passed it over the whole sequence. But good news there, Ben. Does Dirty Rotten Scoundrels appeal? I don't know if you've ever seen the movie.
I haven't. I've heard of it, but. Yeah, I think this chihuahua would be a new sort of thing for me. A new sort of.
Chihuahuas and French maids with stockings.
Yeah, that's an odd combination, isn't it?
I honestly thought, what have I got myself into?
What happens in culture in Lincoln?
We'll leave the chihuahua stuff to the people in Hollywood, I think.
Well, it was quite extraordinary, but some pretty good performances at overall.
Yeah,
one or two microphone hitches and so on and so forth. Also, if you've got slightly longer legs, Ian, beware, because actually sort of going through a performance like this is a bit like Zen Buddhism and kind of making yourself sort of... But it's quite extraordinary, really. They are sorting out the legroom in the circle. Also, hats off to the lady from the New Lincoln Theatre Royal, who insisted on sending us completely the wrong way round and then sort of refused to acknowledge all sorts of things. That, you know, it's embarrassing. What? You know? These.
Never mind. And it was the Lynx and not the Air Ambulance. So.
It was the Lynx. The Lynx.
Lynx and Knots Air Ambulance.
The Lynx and Knots Air Ambulance, indeed. Yeah. That's, thank you. That's it. Okay. Lynx and Knots Air Ambulance. We will point out, though, that if you think of a family trip for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it does contain adult content.
It does.
Some of the kind of lines that Ruprecht, in particular, actually gets up to, can't describe on air, Ian, I'm sorry. But, you know,
what a pity.
It involves KY jelly. I shall say no more.
Right.
I know, Alison. You know, it's
at this time in the morning.
You haven't even got past the 9 o'clock special. A.M.
24 minutes to 9 o'clock. If you're wanting to check out the sort of time, etc. And yes, he's already started talking about the rubber gloves. But never mind.
I knew there was a reason I came here this morning.
As you can see, the pace that we introduced all those years ago. You know, this is the station that emerged out of the old communications degree. We still like to feel it's there. It's a resonance is around. Okay, questions for Ian. Ben, anything from your point of view? We want to battle with Brighton and Newcastle and so on?
Well, to be fair, we are getting closer, Ian. We are getting closer after a win the other day.
Yes. We win as well, so we didn't get any club. Indeed. I would love for Chris Hughton to get promotion again.
Oh, yeah, I would
as well.
He's
a smashing bully, really.
Naturally.
I've never met him, but I mean, a lot of my friends have met him, and he's a really good guy.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And what have you been doing this week? Have you been up to much?
Well, I went to the match against Preston North End.
All right.
And we won 6-0.
Yeah,
that's not happening again, Ian. It's not going to happen again. Simon
and now in the last stage of the cup, where Manchester City are not.
What cup is this? Is this some sort of English Football League sort of thing that Jose Mourinho occasionally...
I think he did feel a weak inside, didn't you? And Manchester United didn't. Yeah. So, in that respect, you've got...
just the single goal, as Ben pointed out, really.
Apparently he was quite proud last night, which I thought was a bit odd.
Who was proud?
Pep Guardiola, in his post-match interview, was saying how proud he was of his players for losing 1-0 to the...
It's his best.
I don't think he understands the Manchester derby.
that was a piece of fans, wasn't it?
No, exactly.
Yes, well, things will pan out in their own way, and Alistair will go catatonic if we go focusing on football too much.
I think, really, you know, that they if they are feeling weak in signs, they should denounce the fact that they're going to as a policy, so the fans know what they're buying. I mean, in Preston then, for instance, had 9 changes from their first team. Mm. A lot of them are finally experienced, but they've had, there's a quite considerable contingent came up from Lancashire, and they watched the team that was slaughtered, especially when they went down to 10 men after half an hour. But
it's a rehearsal for Saturday when maybe they can reverse the other number.
They'll feel a better side on Saturday, that's for sure. But so will we, probably. I don't know.
All very strange and wonderful in its own way. Tessa, any thoughts from yourself?
Yes, I want to go back to last night's show and talk about sort of more Halloween. So, Ian, have you had any ghostly encounters before?
Never.
Mm.
No, I'm sort of eccentric now. I probably wouldn't notice them if I did. As far as I know, no.
Ollie and Obo, your famous cats, yes. Ian, might well be picking up on those strange voices coming from the ether, and you'll just be saying it's just the radio.
There's been some strange voices in my house for quite a while now, because I'm having a new kitchen built in, a huge renovation, and there's been bangs and shoutings, but they've managed it quite well.
Bangs and shoutings. how effectively do you feel you actually manage your time, Ian?
Oh, badly, I think, really. Yeah. I started writing a book about 3 months ago, and then I've had to stop because of this business. It's impossible to write with this going on.
Recent research, which we'll be focusing on in the second part of the programme with Dr. Sally Ann Law, life coach and retirement planning expert Catherine Stewart, focuses on workers not being afraid of blaming their colleagues for their productivity problems.
I think the secret of retirement is to try and keep as busy as you can.
Yeah, well...
And, I mean, people are genuinely amazed how, they haven't got a minute in a day. They're always doing things.
Some of the key facts that sort of emerge from this particular survey by Scottish Widows include reasons that people have issues with productivity. Sitting in boring meetings, 43% of those surveys.
Yes, unfortunately, I had a very low boredom threshold. I used to make an excuse and leave.
I arranged
for jobs to be done. Like, I was called away urgently and stuff.
Waiting for colleagues who are late to arrive at meetings, 45% of those surveys.
Could relate that to student life, to be honest.
Well, yes.
Quite easily. Yeah.
And also redoing someone else's rubbish work. Effectively, those are the top time wasters within the office.
Yeah.
Which results actually in a combined total of nearly 38 million unproductive hours across the British population working week. 38 million unproductive working hours. Just as well, we knock off tremendous sort of times in the 4 hours we actually do with Midweek Drive Morning Edition, yeah. Although we are actually sort of ending here about 20 to 10 this morning. No, 29, I think. Anyway, we do get that extra hour this weekend, remember? Spring forward, fall back. So this is a way of just sort of putting those things
dark
into
mornings,
place.
Darker evenings.
Mm. Finding out exactly how do most Brits want to spend an extra hour if you have one. And I mean, Alison, you managed to manage, because we used to be office buddies, I believe.
Yes, we did, yes.
Halcyon day on the second floor.
It was a good time.
Exactly. You moved on. I sort of was banished to the bowels of the institution. It's okay. It's a work-through process, isn't it? But in terms of
productivity? Do you miss the academic life at all, or is it a case of?
I miss my students, and I miss the camaraderie.
And they miss you, Alison, yes, even though they're all graduated by now.
I do miss my students. I miss the camaraderie. But to be fair, Oxfam is very similar in many ways. I'm working with loads of people who are all different age groups. We've got lots of students right through to people who are beyond retirement. In fact, we've got some 80-year-olds working for us at the moment.
Wow.
And we have a very relaxed, easygoing atmosphere, so it's, it reflects the university quite a lot, really. Yeah.
80 years old, what are they doing?
Sorry, Ian, what was that?
Are they 80 year olds? Are they volunteers?
What are these 80 year olds doing?
Oh, gosh, they're volunteers. They work the till, they sort books, they sort clothes.
Wow,
they, yeah, definitely. They've got years and years of experience, and we need that.
You know, I was going on the internet recently and stuff, and I've discovered that Noam Chomsky is 85.
Yeah. And he was all sorted out with language acquisition devices as well. So, you know, when it comes to the Chomsky Meister, one knows where one is. Oh, we talked about, we are actually talking about incontinence at around about 9:25 this morning with Nadia Sawala. I know, I couldn't resist it, but, you know, little did I think I'd be actually focusing on that. But all is well with the whole sequence. I've just had confirmation from Rachel Abbott that you know, some of the embarrassments and challenges that folk face when they have, female incontinence is the topic of the conversation. I know, Tessa, it's, what can you say? Sometimes
well,
these things...
Well, I've got to have my breakfast after this.
Don't worry, up next we'll be finding out from MindLab's very own Dr. David Lewis what exactly the best British beach in the country is.
Brighton.
Bamborough. Have you ever been to Bamborough?
I have. I don't think anybody else has. I mean, Alison, have you been to Bamborough at all?
No, I haven't.
That's a beach.
That's a beach. Well, thank heavens for that.
So, you know, life's a beach here, and we could go into all sorts of areas on this basis. But, you know, as we anyway, last two questions for Ian, please. Tessa.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
I have indeed, yes.
And will you be joining us again on the show next week?
I do hope so.
Oh, that's good.
Little message from Claire Margerison, actually. Hi, oh. Alex and the team. Enjoying the show this morning. Really missing you all.
Oh, we miss you too, Claire.
Claire Margerison, graduate from the University of Lincoln a matter of months ago. First class honours in English.
Yes, I spoke to Claire.
You did speak to Clarion, I know.
I'm very bad on names.
Yeah. If it's any consolation, re car parking spaces and buses, Claire has to use buses all the time this year. Canterbury is no Lincoln.
Tell her to come back to Lincoln. Just.
She's from Harrogate originally, so you know, he's further, it's obviously migration south.
So if she was rather older, she wouldn't have to pay for the buses.
Claire, you're not old enough. If you get to speak to William today, can you please ask him which pub he used to go to so that she can go to a Sitwell pub tour? Obviously, a cultural and academic experience. William is not with us because he's in Boston today. Okay, so that's why we're doing photograph the image the female incontinence item. Okay, don't get me started.
She's going to send you an angry email now.
She is, yes.
It'll work through that. Anyway, did we get the second question out there?
Yes.
We did.
That's
we
all
did.
Right, then. Good.
I can go now, can I?
I think so.
I'm
In some ways, we had to use the Beach Boys as an introduction to a new scientific formula which has revealed the world's top shorelines, taking into account sea colour, sand quality and cleanliness, amongst other issues. Now, to address this, we have a dynamic duo of fantastic folk. First of all, the legendary psychologist extraordinaire. We always appreciate the delightful soul that is Dr. David Holmes. How are you, David?
I'm fairly well this morning, yes, thank you.
This is marvellous stuff from that point of view. Actually, it's Dr. David Lewis, not David Holmes. Very strange from that point of view. And we also have influential travel vlogger extraordinaire Layla Swan. Good morning, Layla.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, we haven't revealed the winner of this thing as yet. We have said Dubai was actually number one. Actually, we have revealed the winner, Dubai's. We haven't revealed the top British beach. So, Layla, would you like to just officially put our listener out of their particular concern here and say which British beach came in at second place?
I sure will. And the second one was Blackpool.
Blackpool.
Oh, I did suggest it earlier.
Exactly. West Cork, of course, in the Republic of Ireland, coming in at number five. But, David, how was this addressed? What was the key thing, David, in terms of the formula that goes together to sort out clarity of the horizon, sea colour, sand quality, cleanliness, interesting features, air quality and the weather?
Royal Caribbean commissioned me to do this for a fairly specific reason. It was to kind of differentiate between the 250 destinations they've got worldwide and to try and, you know, get to grips with them and find out, you know, which one is really, quality-wise, the best. You know, not by public vote, etc., but actually by a scientific route. You've mentioned some of the factors. Some are more important than others. You put them together in a proportionate formula and apply it to each one in turn. This is quite a tedious task, and so I didn't do it. I left this to our lovely Leia, who actually applied to the various destinations, and bringing up, of course, Dubai on top, and it's quite difficult to sort of compete with that. I mean, some of your local resorts, you know, would not have the stunning buildings or the obvious weather and, you know, the kind of sea and air conditions that you would get out there. However, you know, you've got Blackpool there, so what's that doing there? But it also has fairly iconic buildings to gaze at. You know, they've got the tower, which is a very small Eiffel Tower, if you like, and three piers, you know, which does push it up a little bit.
And, David, we've also got the Star Trek, the exhibition there with the bridge of the Starship Enterprise that we'll be hosting a programme from this very Saturday. So,
gosh, that's impressive.
Yeah, exactly.
And certainly for the geeky sort of people, that would be quite a big priority, I think.
Well,
yes.
Indeed so. But I know, Alison, in the studio, you're probably a bit surprised that no sign of Skegness.
I am indeed. Skegness is a wonderful, wonderful beach to visit. How didn't it make
I mean, Layla, if we can turn to you on this particular one, why no Skegness?
Skegness is a fantastic beach. I mean, it has so much to offer, but Blackpool just really stole my heart and took second. I couldn't help but score it second. It's perhaps one of the most famous and iconic UK shores. And not only does it have the boast blue flag status due to the cleanliness and purity of the water, but, you know, it remains one of the most iconic British shorelines.
And obviously, Ben, I know you're a bit concerned because being a Brighton fan, no sign of Brighton Beach whatsoever.
No, but why is that?
There was loads of different factors. I mean, Brighton, of course, it's one of the most popular places for Brits to travel to on summer. But just down to the formula, it just compared to the other places, the other locations, Blackpool really did take it for the UK.
David, returning to you, to your good self, I mean, the formula which you constructed from that point of view, proving that at the end of the day, mathematics is the universe in which the universe has been written. Is this likely to change? I mean, can shall we say, Blackpool look to actually go for Dubai's position in future years and scenarios, or is it a case of, no, it's going to be the British weather that always lets Blackpool down?
Well, it's not as simple as that. I mean, things change, you know, as you're probably hinting at, and the hope that, you know, other things will shoot up to the top
absolutely.
Spot.
Absolutely.
I mean, people may get a little bit bored of the Dubai buildings. They look stunning now, you know, but in, say, 20 years' time, they probably will still look stunning, but you know, places like Blackpool and that, they're not going to change that much. But you know, overnight, places can actually lose their beaches. Beaches are not stable things; they're renewed by the tides and things, and you have to actually intervene to keep them there. And also, you've got to keep up that level of cleanliness. You know, Blackpool comes out very high on cleanliness, so does Dubai, and that can take money, it takes investment, you know, and should that slip and so should somewhere else move in and even have an iconic building built there, then perhaps, you know, the whole thing will have to be done again.
It's interesting, we're celebrating Blackpool because there are a few folk at this university, at this very station. Ryan Jones, who's a Blackpool-based person, I think shock was the first emotion that went through mind when I revealed the results to some of the Blackpool folk that actually they were number two in the League of Beaches. Alison, questions for yourself?
Well, I was just wondering, how did you come up with the formula to work this all out?
Well, as I said, Royal Caribbean really wanted the kind of 250 destinations to be distinguished. So I had to look at, you know, common elements across the world that make a really good short line. And, you know, you have to sort of just picture yourself sat there, you know, on a beach, staring out, you know, what are the real factors that matter? You know, there's evolutionary feelings are there on most beaches, but what actually accentuates it? What makes it pleasure? So everything, your senses open up because you relax. Because there are no predators in sight, you relax and you notice things like there's not much traffic noise. You notice the sound of the waves. You notice, you know, and sound isn't even in the formula. So a lot of it is visual, a lot of it is smell. You know, a lot of it is that kind of air quality. So you've got to be fairly perfectionist. It's got to be quite clean. You know, the beach has to be clean. You don't want to be shoving your feet into sand that's got glass in it or something like that. You really want the confidence to soak up and enjoy that environment. You've gone there to relax. You haven't gone there as some kind of challenge. So it's kind of like, I think some places, unfortunately, that my colleague has examined have been a challenge.
Well, this is it.
Dare we ask what ones?
They're not mentioning those.
No, no. I mean, Layla, let's keep this on the positive side of things. I'm just thinking about our correspondent in Hawaii, Buck. I mean, he might be devastated now.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, all those talk about the volcanic beaches in Hawaii. And you think, whoa, and Layla obviously has not rated them. That particular aspect is critical. Tessa.
Well, we've just read some comments under, you found the news page, the web for it, and there's a lot of people saying, how can Blackpool be sort of second on the list compared to, say, like Cornwall beaches in England and places like that?
Is it just the strict criteria?
Sour grapes, I feel. I mean, Layla, would you like to pick that one up in terms of, obviously, we're celebrating the success of Blackpool, but there are some places in the southwest that are a bit annoyed about that.
Yes, of course. It was a tough competition, I'm not going to lie. There are so many stunning coastlines around the UK and Ireland, let alone the world, such as Dubai and Thailand, which did make the list. But Blackpool, it's fantastic. I mean, as I mentioned before, and as David mentioned as well, the water, the cleansiness, the purity of the sand, the beautiful iconic features, and such as the Eiffel Tower, the Blackpool Towers that resemble the Eiffel Towers. Just so many different factors which pushed it right to the top of the list.
Which, I suppose, ultimately is it. So you know, to use the vernacular, Devon, Dorset, Cornwall, suck it up. Okay, that's the key thing.
But what about, like, Hunstanton? That's a sweet little Victorian town. Everybody loves Hunstanton.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful, I have to say. But as I mentioned, it was such a tough choice.
Extraordinary. What's the best place to actually go to find out more information about this, David? I mean, in terms of obviously that formula, which we could read out, but brackets SC plus CA. Not great radio, but where can people find this out in more detail?
If you just go to royalcaribbean.co.uk, you will get this and more and interesting facts, possibly, obviously, perhaps identifying a few of the 250 destinations that Royal Caribbean visit, and you can visit them from 100 feet in the air, so and see a different view from that you could ever see from a sand.
Precisely. And of course there is that line which pointed out that sand, of course, if you compress it hard enough, it does become glass. So actually sort of finding glass in sand, that, you know, it's just the heat that's needed. So
we've not got that much foot pressure.
But if you're a superhero, it's just a thought there. But anyway, Layla, finally, in terms of finding your travel vlog, best route for yourself?
You can find me on Twitter with Layla Loves.
Oh, fantastic. So is that L-U-V or L-O-V-E?
Oh, it's L-A-I-L-A-L-O-V-E-S.
Of course. Layla Loves, quite rightly so. Layla and David, it's been fantastic touching base with yourself. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning? Has it been okay for you chaps?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's all right. It's customer satisfaction. I know. It's all already. Hopefully,
second
we'll be
only to sitting on the sand.
Hopefully, we will connect again in the very near future. Round of applause for David and Layla, please. Hey. Okay. Fading memories.